Greetings and welcome to Catholic Cardinal Reflections from the Catholic Community at Stanford University. These are a series of podcasts of Sunday homilies, reflections, and occasional talks given by the staff of the Catholic Community and their guests. Today's speaker is Father Nathan Castle, OP, Director Pastor of the Catholic Community. It is the fourth Sunday of Lent. The readings are from Cycle A.
Was destroyed in the year 70, about 40 years after the events inside the story. The story itself gets written about the year 100, so the story is written about 70 years after the temple's been, or after the events, and about 30 years after the destruction of the temple. But the backdrop for it, John is very theatrically written to do what we just did, really simple, because it's structured that way. In fact, it's possible that the first community to receive it, the people that John first wrote to, most of them wouldn't have been able to read to begin with. And so laying the message out in a kind of theatrical way is a very good way for it to be remembered and presented. In the story, you've got this man who's begging. Jesus, throughout this scene, is called Rabbi. He was called lots of different things. Rabbi was one of the more common, but Rabbi means teacher. So the scene is his disciples, his students, want to learn. And they're asking him to teach them. They're coming out of the temple, and they see this guy who's been blind from birth begging. It's not by accident that he happens to be outside the temple. Because if you have to beg for your living, you better pick a high-traffic area. There was no more high-traffic area in Jerusalem than the steps, the gates of the temple. So this would have been a commonplace occurrence to see somebody, perhaps somebody with some physical deformity, like a person blind from birth, there. So when they come by and they see him, he's just part of the scenery, just something you kind of expect when you go to the temple. So they see him but don't see him. They see him only long enough to use him as the kind of jumping off point for a theological speculative argument, a conversation. And they ask, Rabbi, is it his parents' sin or his sin that caused him to be born blind? And the rabbinical tradition had argumentation for what a person could have done in the womb to sin. They were just repeating what they had heard. Most of us have done that in our lives, repeat arguments that we've heard other people propose. A lot of our political dialogue is really like that. People talking about things that they don't really know, but that they've heard. Anyway, they've heard that this is the way the question gets formed. Was it his parents or was it him? And Jesus just has to say, no, neither one. And he goes on to say, it's so that the works of God could be manifest in him. When I was younger, I used to think that meant God made this man blind so that one day later, somewhere along the line, Jesus would come walking by and heal him. I think what John is really saying is that's the purpose for any of us being here. God's hope for all of us being here is that God's own being might be manifest to the world, that the presence of God would shine through us. The way it ends up shining through this guy this particular day unfolds bit by bit. Jesus, it says, took a little bit of his own spit and makes a bit of mud and rubs the man's eyes. you remember when water bubbled up out of the ground? And it made clay. And when we first meet God, right back at the very beginning of the story, God scoops up some of the clay and begins to mold it and fashion it into the first human. I've always liked that particular media of clay. As soon as you touch it, your imprint is all over it. So the imprint of God, God's fingerprints, if you will, are on the clay from the very beginning, and then God goes beyond that and puts it up to his mouth and blows his own breath into it and becomes alive. At the 10:30 Mass this morning, we have a lot of faculty children, little kids. There was a little kid there that looked particularly attentive when I was talking about the clay, so I asked her, tell me, what do you do if the period ends and you have to put the clay away but you want to work with it tomorrow? What do you do? She said, you put it in Tupperware. I was thinking when I was little, we would have to get paper towels and get them wet and fold it around whatever it was that you were making. And I don't think we had Tupperware back in my day. But whatever we put it in, it had to be wrapped up in wet stuff so that you would, the next day when you came back to it, that it wouldn't be all hard and no longer pliable. That's what Jesus is doing and what the author of John's Gospel is doing. Because Jesus is God in the flesh walking the earth, giving the whole earth a new start, a chance of a big cosmic do-over. And when he sees this person that has this part of him that's not working right, he just makes a little clay. And he touches the part that's dried up and otherwise wouldn't be moldable. So if God touches you in the place that's dried up and no longer moldable, where does God need to touch you? Where have you hardened? Where have you been taught things that hardened you, or taught questions that hardened you? Or where have your opinions formed with such solidity that they may as well be stone? Or where is there resentment, or angers, or differences of whatever kind and wherever they came from? Where is it in you that if the Lord were to have a chance to refashion you for your own healing, where, what would he need to touch? Well, he touches the man, puts the mud on his eyes, and tells him to go and wash in the pool of Siloam, which means sent. Do you know the Greek word for sent person? Apostello, apostle. Is a sent person. When we speak of ourselves as being belonging to an apostolic church, we're a church of sent people. People sent on a mission, empowered by the Lord. The guy goes to the pool of Siloam with sent persons, and his sight is restored. And then all hell breaks loose. Because then everybody wants to have an opinion about what's going on here. And when some of the church officials, the synagogue officials, they come and they get in the middle of this and they start speculating about what's just going on here. This guy obviously can see. The first thing they try to do is say, well, it's not really him. Try to take away what shred of identity this nameless guy has. Nobody cared who he was, just that blind guy. And now that he's the center of attention, they try to take that away from him. You're not even that guy. You're just somebody that looks like that guy. No, I'm that guy. I'm that guy. Well, then how did this happen? I don't need to recount the whole thing for you, but the story unfolds that he doesn't know who Jesus is. He said, it was this man they called Jesus. He put mud on my eye, and then I could see after I washed it off. Later, they keep grilling him, and he said, well, I don't know. He must be a prophet. Then, as you heard, they drag his parents into the thing. Wouldn't you love that? Well, is this guy your kid? No. Well, yeah. Then we learn that they don't really want to be on this spot because they're afraid. They can see that this is going in a dark direction, and they don't want to be on the record. He's old enough, ask him. They don't want to be on the wrong side of these folks. In the conversation that ensues, the guy begins to speak up and he reasons for himself. Well, yeah, it's true that the thing about the Sabbath, but never in history has anyone restored the sight of one born blind. He must be from God. And this just aggravates the teachers because he's reasoning, he's doing their job right in front of them and teaching them. And I like that. In the end, they ask him to the point of distraction. He says, I've already told you and you're not listening. Could it be that you want to be his followers too? Well, that was the last straw. We know who Moses is and we know God spoke to Moses. We know that God has acted in the past and communicated with our people. We don't know who this guy is or where he's come from. And I love the word in the Greek that gets used next. They threw him out. The word is ek, which means out. Ek, balo, the word for ball. They threw him out like a ball, tossed him to the curb. I think that's the part that John's original community that had them riveted, because they were the community of the thrown out. Thrown away. When the temple got destroyed in the year 70, the whole of Jerusalem was depopulated of anybody Jewish. It was renamed, and only Roman citizens could live there. They didn't just scrape that building off the Temple Mount. They depopulated the entire city. And as the Jews tried to reorganize themselves, the last thing that they needed was people trying to say that, yeah, I'm Jewish, but I believe that Jesus of Nazareth, who died on the cross, is the long-awaited Messiah. They didn't need that complicating factor. They're trying to reorganize themselves. In that era, it could be you and I, if we were raised in the tradition, we would still continue to go to the synagogue service on the Sabbath on Saturday. But now that we've come to believe that Jesus is the long-awaited one, we would go to the breaking of the bread, the Mass, on the first day of the week. On Sunday, and try to do both, because after all, Jesus is the long-awaited one. Well, then there was a meeting in the year 90, and at that meeting, tacked onto the end of the synagogue service was a curse upon all who believe that Jesus is the Messiah. So if you were trying to do both, after 90, you're going to hear a curse upon all who believe Jesus is the Messiah. Can you still go? A lot of people felt thrown out. So when you get to the point of the story where it says, and they threw him out, I think everybody in the room felt like, oh, I remember that. I remember when it happened to me. And then Jesus goes and looks for the thrown out guy and finds him. I was thinking of, you ever had to chase a ball that's been thrown out? Think of bad tennis playing. The ball goes way across other courts or over the fence. Little help? Jesus is the one going out looking for the thrown out one. Are you like Jesus in that way? Is there anything in you that goes and looks for the thrown out one? Once he finds him, he speaks to him heart to heart and just says, do you believe in the Son of Man? It's a humble title, the Son of Man. Well, I guess I'd like to, sir. Who is he? And then Jesus does this wonderful thing. He's talking to a guy who has not seen anything in his life until about 10 minutes ago. Who is he, sir? And what does Jesus say? You're looking at him. You're looking at him. And then it just says, he worshiped him. What does that mean? Did he build an altar on the spot? Light a candle? Sing a hymn? It just said, he worshiped him. I think he opened his heart to him. He, I don't know how else to put it. He saw that he was in the presence of something wonderful and worshiped him, opened himself to him. We're fairly getting fairly deep into Lent, and it could be that it's kind of flown by you. It's finals week after all. You do have other things to think about than saying your prayers. But if you really wanted to enter into that wonderful force of Lent that draws us closer and closer to the heart of God and to our own heart of hearts, I'd recommend this to you. This is the chapter 9 of John's Gospel. You saw that it didn't take very long to read. You could simply go to prayer, ask the Lord to be with you, ask the Spirit to open your mind, your heart, your eyes, ask to know where I've dried up already, where am I hard for God to work with, where does the Lord need to touch me in order to refashion me, and say, where has my seeing made me blind? Where has my seeing made me blind? What am I? How do I know what I don't know? Would you please teach me? Would you lead me in any direction where someone's been thrown out? Or where I maybe was even complicit in that? Is there some way that I can come back to you and draw someone back to you? I think if we were just to do that, you can do that in finals week or while you're on the break. You might find that by the time Easter arrives, there really is something new welling up inside of you. Some new spring of life, some new idea. That'd be my hope for all of us. So I'm going to recommend that simple little practice to you. Chapter 9, beginning of John's Gospel. Maybe pray and invoke the man born blind. We don't even know what his name is. Say, would you come over here and sit by me? Because I want to read your story, and I want Jesus to speak to my heart and open my eyes the way he spoke to your heart and open it in your eyes.
Thank you for listening to Catholic Cardinal Reflections from the Catholic Community at Stanford University. For more information, please visit our website at catholic.stanford.edu. This is Father Isaiah Mary Milano, OP, the Associate Director and Parochial Vicar for the Catholic Community at Stanford and the voice of Catholic Cardinal Reflections. Till next time, God bless you.